The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. In his teaching, Jesus said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk about in long robes, to be greeted obsequiously in the market squares, to take the front seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. These are the men who swallow the property of widows while making a show of lengthy prayers. The more severe will be the sentence they receive." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the treasury, and many of the rich put in a great deal. A poor widow came and put in 2 small coins, the equivalent of a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "I tell you solemnly, this poor widow has put more in than all who have contributed to the treasury, for they have all put in money they had over, but she, from the little she had, has put in everything she possessed, all she had to live on." The Gospel of the Lord. The quest for peace is as old as humanity. Ever since the fall, the rift between God and Adam and Eve, there's been a striving for peace. That's been very much part of human existence. And we know that the whole of the Old Testament is littered with the wars that were going on, and the hoped for peace. And then the longing for that birth of the Messiah, who would bring peace, expressed all the way through the Old Testament in the prophets and repeated and preached ever since. So that almost 50 years ago now, Blessed John the 23rd gave us an encyclical at the early days of the Vatican Council called Pacem in Terris, Peace on Earth. And that was at the time of the Cold War and the nuclear threat, and Ban the Bomb and all those marches in the 60s. It also had apartheid in South Africa and the erection of the Berlin Wall. But the encyclical was about that universal peace in truth, in justice, in charity, and in liberty. And it was addressed to all people of goodwill. And the opening words are these: "Peace on earth, which all people of every era have most eagerly yearned for, can be firmly established only if the order laid down by God be dutifully observed." We'll come back to that. And then the final document that came out of Vatican II, the pastoral constitution on the church in the modern world called Gaudium et Spes, opens this way: "The joy and the hope, the grief and the anguish of the people of our time, especially of those who are poor or afflicted in any way, are the joy and the hope, the grief and the anguish of the followers of Christ as well." And there's a whole section of that constitution on peace, acknowledging that the century that formed it, the 20th, was marked by persistent and acute hardships and anxiety, resulting, of course, from the 2 world wars and the constant threat of nuclear weapons. But in a sense, if the 20th century was soaked in blood of 2 world wars and the Holocaust and the horror of terrorism, that's passed now into the new millennium, and we've witnessed 9/11 and the Iraqi war and the ongoing Afghanistan war and the Arab Spring, which isn't resolved in any way properly, and now, of course, Syria, and the rumbling threat of nuclear weapons being used by Iran or Israel, one on each other, and that dreadful Berlin-type wall, but higher than that, all the way round Bethlehem and some of the holy sites. And in many ways, in the midst of all that, we feel powerless. We feel that war goes on in our name, and we've no power about that. Most people did not want to go into Iraq when we did. Most people know the nonsense of Afghanistan because it's never, ever in history been won. And how can we go on believing that there's any real truth in the promise of peace? How can a world like ours find peace, some release from its pain? And there's a sense in which what John the 23rd was trying to say was, it will only when there's truth, when there's justice, when there's freedom, and when there's charity, will that happen. Because peace, well, the opposite of all that, of course, is injustice and hurt and discrimination and exploitation. And it's only when they've been abolished that there will therefore be a peace. And peace is more than just a disarmament, more than just an absence of war. It's concerned with justice and respects the truth and freedom, doesn't try to hide it away. And it's concerned and radiant with love for humanity. It was John Paul II that warned, either learn to walk together in peace and harmony, or drift apart and ruin ourselves and others. And as he was always pleading for peace, so Benedict has been exactly the same, and went recently to Lebanon to bring some sort of encouragement to the people there. Fear not, he said, the Lord is truly with you. We heard that in Isaiah. Sorry, the first reading. It wasn't from Isaiah. The first reading with Elijah. He says, don't be afraid, to the woman. Fear not, the Lord is truly with you. But the Lord is truly with us in all that's going on. Peace, so very precious. But it begins in the human heart. That inner peace, which is the right ordering of our lives. It comes when what we want is what is right, and we strive to achieve what is good. That's why we need all of us to make a constant effort to renounce selfishness and to embrace goodness and the love of others. When we had the Remembrance Mass for the school on Thursday, I was challenging them about why fights break out. Fights break out with their brothers and their sisters, or fights break out among their friends. I was assured in our school we don't have fights in the playground. When I was in London, the school playground was outside the window, as it were, and occasionally hear, fight, 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 and you knew that there was something going on, but that was in a London. They're calmer here, so I believe. But you know, they knew as well as I do exactly what I was saying. They fall out with their brothers and sisters because they've got something I want, or they're playing with what I want to play with, or they're not doing what I want them to do. It always comes back to the same thing. Christ makes his peace as it's in front of us every week, every time we're here, by opening wide his arms on the cross and crossing the selfishness out and putting God's will there. That peace of Christ. And that can't be imposed on an unwilling world. It must find a home in human hearts. And so there's got to be radical change. And that change has got to come all through. It's not just us, but it is us. But it's got to come through politicians and leaders and those in authority as well. There's got to be that change of heart. And it's when they refuse to repent. Again, John Paul always said, you won't have peace unless we learn forgiveness as well. With justice, yes, the other issues, but forgiveness. That repenting, turning around, thinking, this isn't right. An ancient definition of peace is tranquility of order, or the opposite, disorder. The Hebrew shalom is a state whereby a person or a society lives in harmony with nature and in harmony with God. And the opposite is disharmony and chaos. But maybe there are just two words that are the soul of peace: love and life. Neglect love, neglect life, and you can't have peace. That may be something to take away. You think of, why did World War I start? Why was the Second War? Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we there? Neglect of love for those people. Neglect of life and all its fullness for the people. And of course, the prototype is a God, who is a God of love and of life. God gives in love and he gives life. The Lord, the giver of life, we say in a few moments in the Creed, the life of his only Son, who is our only true peace. And that was only won by the crown of thorns, and yet brings a peace which passes all understanding. May peace this Remembrance Sunday be in our hearts.